I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Everything you wanted to know about the burqa can be gleaned from a new documentary, Story of Burqa, Case of a Confused Afghan. The movie premieres this Thursday, May 10th at the Doxa Documentary Film Festival, 7 p.m. at the Empire Granville 7 Cinema. Its director, Brishke Ahmed, joins me now to talk about this movie, a personal journey she took to determine the origin and effect of the burqa on Afghan women, its society and culture, Islam at large, and her own sense of being. She travels to Afghanistan, talks to cultural and religious historians, makers of burqas and others, to find out what they think of the burqa. She travels to Holland, to a museum, to find out what the history of the garment is, as well does a social experiment, having someone wear the burqa on the corner of Davie and Thurlow here in Vancouver. Brishke Ahmed has created film and television programming here in Canada and Afghanistan. Her film Reclaiming Rights premiered at Doxa in 2010. The website for more is at chitchatproductions.ca. You can get more info on Doxa at doxafestival.ca. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Brishke Ahmed. Ms. Ahmed, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for chatting with me.
Thanks for joining us. Yeah. So, growing up, you grew up in Canada, did you?
No, I was born in Afghanistan. Fortunately, my father was a diplomat, so I left Afghanistan at 5 and lived in India for a bit, and then I never experienced the Taliban because just as they came into Afghanistan, I relocated and immigrated to Canada, Vancouver.
So what had you thought growing up the burqa meant?
You know what? Because I left Afghanistan so young, like officially when I saw a burqa, it was in Canada on TV, right? Enjoying the BBC and CNN clips and things. And I had just assumed that it was an Afghan garment, and I assumed that it was the Taliban's reason for forcing women to wear it had to do something with Islam.
I just
assumed what I guess what my best friend Megan would have assumed, the same thing.
And those of us here, speaking for myself at least, we just assume that it is an Islamic garment that, say, dated back to the Quran.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, so that's exactly what I thought. And then when I was editing my film, my previous film that played at Doxa, my father was helping me do the subtitles and just check the translation. And he's the one that just kind of looked at the computer screen, and he just said, oh, I just wish this garment would leave Afghanistan. And I was like, what do you mean, Dad? Isn't it Afghan? And he's like, no, it's not Afghan, and it's not Islamic. And that just kind of like, that was just like a huge, the wind that blew, just a storm that came towards me. I was like, what? And and that's how it started.
Yeah, we're talking on the radio, I guess internet radio at that. If we had to describe what it looked like, how do you attempt to do that?
If I had to describe what it looked like, the burqa itself?
Yeah.
Well, it comes in many colors, but the burqa itself is literally just the face, when the face is covered fully as well. So you have its different versions. In Afghanistan, you have the mesh, the little mesh that comes around the eyes, mm-hmm. so a person can see out in tiny tidbits. And then around the world, the cousin versions of it, where the niqab or abaya and stuff have a different look in the face part. But it's just basically is a hijab with a face cover.
And then when you see a woman wear it, she's covered from head to toe, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the film, you don one.
Yes.
What's it like underneath?
I don't know how anyone could get used to it. It just baffles me. Your hearing is impaired because you've got this blanket around your ears, first of all. It's very difficult to see through a mesh because you've got these little segments where you can see. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is possible, like when my friend tried it on Davy Street, where we have proper lights and cars actually stop at a red light, you're able to cross the street. But it baffles me how somebody in Afghanistan can be mobile in it.
Yeah, there's
where
a
we don't have traffic lights and there's holes on the floor, in the ground, and there's it's just such a different world. It baffles me.
Yeah, there's a clip of you in the movie, and you have to sort of lift it to get upstairs in the sort, right?
Yes, and that's a decent set of stairs, and I'm walking a clear path in the film.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing on my way. that is not what cobble streets are like.
Yeah. Now, you asked the question in the movie, if hijab is good but burqa is best, what is better?
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. Yeah. You're the only one that picked up on that.
Yeah, no, for a lot of us, I mean, if we watched an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry meets someone who wears a burqa, we sort of think that the hijab and the burqa are the same thing. They're not, right?
No, not at all. No, and that I'm really happy that you point out that sequence, because for me, the question in my head it runs, is like, okay, you know, the Quran says that the hijab, which is just a scarf and modesty, is good. And then, you know, all these websites and these fundamentalists are saying, no, burqas are better. Okay, so, you know, just the face cover. Well, then what is best?
Yeah.
I mean, what is best then? Just Islamic women to just be locked inside, indoors completely, to just live in darkness completely? Like, we have to question that. I have to question that as a woman born from Afghanistan. It's important, because what are we moving towards?
So going back historically, who wore burqas, and where did they come from?
Well, from my research, speaking with the experts, it seems from what I gathered from it that it was a garment in palaces for court ladies, harem girls, to cover them up, because the kings had a multitude of them. Mm. And it was a noble garment at one point, and by that what I mean is that harem girls or court ladies could wear it and show the exterior world and the exterior people that you are not allowed to look at me, like I am of such a high class and of such a high value that, you know, poor eyes or normal people are not allowed to even look at these treasures of the palace. So I, because even the Textile Research Center woman in Holland did connect that and prove that theory to be accurate, that it was for court ladies originally. And then, of course, when we meet the other experts, we get a little bit more sinister sense of, well, not just court ladies, but that even men used it and so on.
Yeah.
Which is very unusual if you think about it, if it belonged in harem girls, but then now it's become an Islamic garment, which the two clash so badly, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's an argument in the movie as to you know, its origin, India or Britain. There's also the...
Well, you know what, the British... argument. I mean, it sounds really huge, but it, you know, for me, it very well could be true. You know, because people, you know, in the late 17th century, 18th century, I mean, trying to gain control of Afghanistan was very critical in the Great War between Russia and England. So, could this garment have been a political tool that England created to be able to manage Afghanistan better? I mean, There is some truth to that, you know, and the experts kind of point a good little finger there, you know.
Now, you begin the movie in a shop in Afghanistan where they sell burqas. They're made and sold. And you're talking to the people there.
Yeah.
The people that make them, the people that sell them, and the customers, they're all men.
Yeah.
What did they think of the garment, or what do they think of the garment?
It's really interesting. The one thing I found out is that people's perceptions of the burqa and the garment itself has a lot to do with illiteracy and literacy. Like, the experts, the very knowledgeable people, completely made it clear that it has nothing to do with Islam. In fact, they, you know, throughout the movie, they've made it clear that they want it out of Afghanistan. But then when I go and I meet people of a younger generation, you know, the generation that kind of grew up under the Taliban, that are not as educated or didn't have access to education, they somehow still firmly believe that it is good, that it is beautiful, that it is Islamic, that it is necessary. And it just baffles me that this little middle generation is stuck. But then it also makes sense, because they were born and raised during the Taliban. So they've been completely brainwashed.
So when you go down the street in Afghanistan, as you did while you were there making the movie, can you sort of give us a percentage of how many women wear it and don't?
Yeah. In Kabul, thankfully, more and more girls are removing them. But I would still say that it's about a 70%, 75% that wear it.
Yeah.
So just, you know, about a 30% maybe is removing it inside Kabul. But then what's scarier to me is that the 70% that is the 30 or 40% that is removing it, some of them are starting to wear the Iranian black chador, which is another garment that's not from Afghanistan. So there's these other sort of hijabs that are creeping in. And my film kind of points at that too, at the strangeness of that. But if you leave Kabul and you go outside, it's pretty much all women still wear it.
Yeah. The other thing that the film does very well is talk about who's benefited from the use of the hijab. People that are for it and against it have used it as a means to I guess solidify their power or their influence on Afghanistan. The Iranians, is that something that they're trying to do with their version of it now?
Well, you know, what happens in Afghanistan is critical to what will happen in Iran. So if Afghan women, for instance, give up wearing the burqa and start, you know, wearing the normal hijab just in modesty and start, you know, participating in society, asking for more rights and things like that, it's gonna you know, go over into Iran. And Iran tries to manipulate Afghan politics and try to get some control over it desperately because it will have an impact on their nation and what their future intentions are. So the black chador creeping inside Afghanistan, which is very much a symbol of Iran, that black chador, and very much a Shia garment. It's very unusual that I'm seeing it in Afghanistan, but it's usually the Afghan refugees who grew up in Iran, and they've brought it back, and now it's part of their Islamic version of the garment, of hijab. And Iran will definitely, like, for Iran, I think it is critical that the burqa remain. I think it would be detrimental to Iranian politics if Afghan women unveiled.
Now, there's a poignant scene in the movie where you are conducting an interview with two experts, and you decide to have some musicians accompany the interview. Mm-hmm. I guess it's a dad and his two sons, is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and as you're doing the interview, he doesn't play as you'd instructed him to, because I guess there were burqas on stage with him.
Well, I didn't even pick up on it, because sometimes, you know, things just kind of happen, right? I've not researched this musician, so I don't know. But what I noticed was a coldness immediately, and then he kept on telling me that the rhubarb, the rhubarb is not warming up. Like, the strings have to warm up. It's a very difficult instrument. And I finally just had to stop and ask him, like, what is going on? Where is this music, you know? And then he told me that it's not about the rhubarb. It's just that he's not inspired. Like, this entire scene, this entire interview, the burqas next to him are not inspiring him to play. And when he finally got rid of the burqas from his stage and he started playing so beautifully, I understood, because he's a musician, and music was banned during the Taliban.
And how many, does he make up sort of the majority of how Afghans feel nowadays about it?
I would say, again, it comes back to the artist, the educated, yes. But there's such a huge illiterate population in Afghanistan that they can't even read the Quran themselves. They go somewhere and sit down, and some man interprets it the way he wishes, and they listen, right? So inside the city, Kabul, I would say more and more men are against it, because expats are returning, and we are aware of the history and the truth behind this garment. But out in the villages, men strongly support it.
Yeah. And how is the education system? Are people getting educated in Afghanistan these last 10 years, or are the numbers increasing?
Yeah. That's the one benefit from NATO, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one benefit of NATO that I do support. Yes, schools are opening up. Girls are going to school. But the question for me always is that in the villages, when the girl goes to the girls' school, she enters in her burqa. Yes, she can lift her burqa up inside the school and study. Then she puts it back on and goes back home. But by the time she's 15 or 16, it doesn't matter. She will get married, and her life will carry on the same way. So this garment is not just, you know, it's for me, what I see for Afghanistan is there's no way Afghanistan can improve and move forward as long as this garment exists, because we'll always be dependent on foreign aid, because half the population is not participating rightfully, and that makes it really hard for the other half, whether it's men even, to move forward. There are men who want the country to evolve, but how can they evolve if they have to bring income to a family of five girls who are all under the burqa, and even if they go to school, they still cannot drive or have hopes of becoming a doctor or a pilot, or do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it actually, like, economically, it is like the burqa actually is not just suffocating the women; it's suffocating Afghanistan. It is keeping us, you know, decades and decades behind, and it's because it's limiting the participation of half the country. And if I can just say one thing, you know, Afghanistan is a country that honestly needs every single person there. Every citizen has to, like, really give it their all and give back to the country to help it move forward. And when you have half that don't, it's just impossible.
Why is it in the movie that you don't talk to Afghan women who wear it?
I do talk to Afghan women at the... There's the girl, the tailor, I asked her. And then there's another woman also. Mostly, I didn't want to show the girl in the blue burqa that gives the typical answer of, well, I have to wear it, or it's Islamic. Like, I've seen that before.
Right.
And at the same time, we've never seen men really talk about it. You know, we've seen the girls in blue kind of, you know, their story. We know it. We can sense it. I really wanted the men to make the points, because if Afghan men hear it from the women, it won't inspire them to go to their daughters and say, okay, you don't have to wear that from now onwards, just wear the headscarf. But if they hear it from intelligent men, they will take it more seriously. It'll have more impact. Because it's the men that have played with that garment, it's the men that have implemented it, it's the men that have brought it, right?
Yeah.
And I just really wanted the focus to just, you know, be on that.
There's a great scene in the movie where you're talking to a tailor.
Yeah.
And the discussion is about his own family life and who chooses what to wear between him and his wife and what they choose to wear. He makes Western clothes in that shop, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so you have this discussion that evolves into sort of the modern fashion of Afghanistan, and that's changing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're seeing, like, suits and ties and things like that coming in, and Western clothes, you know, coming in. Like, fashion is trying to, you know, creep into Afghanistan, and it is. But it was so odd because he makes suits, yet he's not allowed to ever wear one, right?
Yeah.
Which is so strange. And that moment made me feel so sad, because it's like he's restricted. And so then, of course, he's going to go home and restrict his wife, right? It's kind of like this, the way to survive in Afghanistan. It's like, you're not allowed to wear a suit. Okay, and then I'm going to go tell my wife, you're not allowed to wear a pants and a shirt, you know?
We watch the movie, and we're able to decide for ourselves what we think of the burqa and the sort. As its filmmaker, did you come away from the process of making the movie and think about your own identity?
Yeah, it definitely, you know what, when I saw it, when I was making this movie, I didn't begin making it expecting to take a cause on, you know, and just kind of questioning my identity as a woman. But after finishing it up, I really was angry. It made me, and the film is not anger at all, I know, but it made me really angry that it's a garment, but look how much damage it's done to Afghanistan, you know, And when I found out the political connection to it, it just made me really angry. And I feel a stronger connection to Afghanistan now, and I feel a stronger cause to help Afghanistan. And I think it has to do through education. So this is just one of my ways of trying to contribute and taking it on, you know?
It's also had political connections in Europe. With the Sarkozy government in France.
Yeah.
The situation this past weekend, where he's now, I guess, no longer president, he's been defeated.
Yeah.
Has that changed at all, the sort of dynamic between French and, say, Muslim citizens there?
Well, there's, like, France had a weird reaction to the Sarkozy burqa ban, right?
Yeah.
I mean, some people, you know, are taking, like, you know, sort of the police action in their own hand and, like, ripping it off women's faces, which is also not correct, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say that when Sarkozy banned the burqa, I was in support of it, because he didn't ban hijab. You know, mm-hmm. he banned the entire face cover, but he did not ban what is in the Quran. So I didn't really understand why women there were getting, you know, angry, because he wasn't against Islam. And I personally think that if for every woman that chooses to wear one themselves, as they say that it's my choice, for instance, I want to keep my face covered up, that's fine, you know. Call it fashion, then. Call it a face cover that you're choosing. But don't call it an Islamic garment, because by doing so, there's 10, 20 women in those countries, like Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, all these countries, who are suffering because of it, you know? So give it the right title.
Yeah. Well, what's next for you? What are you working on another movie now?
Yes, this film definitely kind of pushed me towards examining Islam more, mm-hmm. and finding out how much of what is being shared with women and men in Islamic countries is true or not. Again, because there is so much illiteracy in those countries, right? It's quite easy to manipulate the people. And so the next film I'm going to be making is, again, exploring women's role in Islam and really, you know, challenging some imams about how they've interpreted the Quran.
This is a very powerful film. It's a thought-provoking one, an interesting one. I appreciate your time today, Brishke. Congratulations on the movie, and break a leg Thursday night.
Thank you very much. And, yeah, thanks a lot, and hope you all have a good listen.
You're very welcome. The movie is called Story of Burqa, Case of a Confused Afghan. It premieres this Thursday night at DOXA, the Documentary Film Festival, 7 p.m. at the Empire Granville 7 Cinema. For more information on the screening, doxafestival.ca, the website for more on the movie, chitchatproductions.ca. It's filmmaker Brishke Ahmed on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.